The Gemara tells us that in the neighborhood where Rabbi Meir lived, there were these Bironi. These Bironi were a group of people who were very, very anti-Das Torah, anti the Chachamim. They did everything in their power to make the life of Rabbi Meir difficult. The Gemara says they made his life so difficult that one day he began davening. He said, Hashem, please have mercy. Please have rachmanis and let them die. His wife, Bruria, heard him davening. And his wife said to him, Meir, why are you saying that? The pasuk says, Yitamu chataim min ha'aretz. The pasuk says, Hashem wishes for the sins to be no longer in the land. If they do tshuva, there won't be sins. It didn't say there shouldn't be sinners. It says there shouldn't be sins. If they don't do sins, there won't be sinners. You should daven that they do tshuva. At which point, Meir did exactly that. He began davening that they should do tshuva. And in fact, that's what happened. They were chozru b'tshuva. They did tshuva. And the problem was taken away. And this Gemara presents a number of problems. The first is rather obvious, and that is that Rabbi Meir is a Tana. Rabbi Meir is a tzaddik of such unimaginable proportions, it's difficult to difficult to imagine that he's going to be davening Hashem, please have mercy, let them die. It doesn't sound like the type of thing that Rabbi Meir would ask for. It certainly doesn't sound like mercy. But more than that, isn't what his wife said to him obviously correct? If they're bothering you, ask Hashem that they should do tshuva. That'll get rid of the problem much more easily, much more effectively. It'll be much cleaner. What, in fact, was he thinking so as not to ask it? Number one, how could he ask that they die? It doesn't sound appropriate for a person of Rameya's stature. And number two, isn't his wife's Eitzah advice that he should daven that they should do tshuva much more obvious? And isn't that what he should have davened for from the beginning? And to understand this Gemara, I think we have to focus on a little bit more some of the big picture issues of life. And to do that, I'd like to borrow something from a previous Shmuz, from Shmuz 176, a diamond with a flaw. And that is the following. The Gemara in Erevin tells us that for many, many years, actually for 2.5 years, there was a machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. For 2.5 years, as the two academies argued on the following point, Noach lo adam shelo nivra, is it better for man to have been created, or is it better for man to have not been created? For 2.5 years, they were presenting arguments back and forth, back and forth. Is it better for man to have been created, or is it better for man not to have been created? At the end, nimnu v'gomru, they took a vote. They took a vote, and they decided, Noach lo adam shelo nivra, it is better for man not to have been born. That was their conclusion. And this Gemara clearly presents a number of difficulties. Number one, it's probably the most depressing thought you could ever imagine. It's better not to have been created. It doesn't sound very optimistic. It doesn't sound very empowering. So this decision that both academies, both Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, reached that it's better not to have been created, number one, is very depressing. But number two, clearly Hashem doesn't agree. At the end of the day, Hashem created man. At the end of the day, Hashem created this world we live in. So it's clear that it finds favor in Hashem's eyes to have done it, the proof being he did it. So how could Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel gather together and vote on the issue and conclude that God did wrong? It is better for man not to have been created. They should have looked at the simple fact that Hashem did it and understood, obviously, it's better for man to have been created. And this question is quite profound, and this question is actually discussed by the Beis Yosef. The Beis Yosef is the Mechaber of Shulchan Aruch. He wrote probably the single most pivotal halachic work in our history. The Shulchan Aruch is the code of law that we, to this very day, go by. And what's a little bit not as well known is the fact that the Beis Yosef was an incredible tzaddik, and had many, many discussions with a malach. There's a sefer written, the Magid Misharim, that the Beis Yosef wrote, that discusses the various Torah principles that he and this malach learned together. Apparently, this malach came to the Beis Yosef and offered to learn with him. The Beis Yosef incorporated very little of this into Shulchan Aruch, because Shulchan Aruch is to be paskin by man, But there were many, many issues that on a regular basis this Malach would come, and many issues that the Malach would bring him from Shemayim, the truth and understanding. In any case, in this Sefer, the Magen Misharim, he quotes that the Malach said to him, "You got it right. Your pshat in that machlokas between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel is correct." And the Magen Misharim basically speaks out what the answer is. He says that the reason why Hashem created man and put him on this planet is to benefit mankind. As great as a malach is, if you go up into the celestial heavens and you see the greatest malachim, groups and groups, levels and levels, and you find the most pure, most holy angel, all of them are stagnant. Whatever level Hashem gave them, whatever level Hashem created them on, that's where they remain for eternity. But Hashem wanted to make one creation and make that creation even greater than the holiest Malach. But the problem was that to really benefit that particular creation in the fullest way, if it could be, Hashem had a problem. Hashem said, if I give that creation everything, and it's given, and it's given, and it's given, it'll be Nahama de Kisufa. Hashem wanted to create something even greater than the angels and give that everything. But the problem was that if Hashem is the giver and giver and giver, which is the nature of Hashem, if it could be, on the receiving end, there's an embarrassment. If I haven't worked for it, if I haven't achieved it, it's not something that I acquired, there's an embarrassment, I'm a receiver. And therefore, when Hashem decided to create man, Hashem decided to create man in a different way than any other creation. Man would be given the opportunity to become what he is. Hashem would take this neshama, put it into the battleground called life, and give it a test. It will be given the opportunity to make itself into what it will be for eternity. If it rises to the heights, it'll be greater, far greater than any malach, than any celestial being. However, if it chooses incorrectly, it'll be diminutive, it'll be damaged, it'll be small. But because man is given free will, because man is given the choice, when he makes himself into what he is that for eternity, but it's something that he worked for, something that wasn't given to him, something that he acquired. Granted, he was given the opportunity. Granted, Hashem created him. Granted, Hashem created the world. And granted, Hashem gave man every opportunity to become that. But at the end of the day, it's my choices, my decisions, my hard work, and therefore it's something I acquired. And it's no longer the bread of embarrassment. It's no longer something that was gifted to me. It's something that I worked for. And that pleasure is the complete pleasure. When a human being accomplishes his mission in this world, when a human being reaches stellar heights and he perfects himself as much as he is able and he leaves this world, he's able to be close to Hashem. He's able to enjoy the greatest benefit, the most incredible joy imaginable, but it's pure, untampered, because it's something he acquired, something he worked at. And then the Magen Misharim explains how it works. As the Medrash Tanhuma tells us, before Hashem created the physical world, Hashem created all of the neshamas. All of the neshamas, all of the souls that are to be born into future generations, Hashem created. And they're sitting there, we'll call it a neshama area, a holding area. And all the neshamas are there. And the neshamas watch when some neshamas are put into this world. And the group of neshamas who are all gathered in that holding area watch those neshamas come back. And they see some souls that come back brilliant, shining, gigantic, so powerful and glorious that they outshine any other thing in existence. And when the rest of the neshamas see these pure neshamas come back, each one says, "Let me go. I want to be put into the world. I too want to become that." But the neshamas also see some other neshamas come back. And these other neshamas don't come back quite as brilliant. They don't come back quite as pure. Some come back darkened. Some come back blackened. Some come back missing arms and limbs. Some come back smaller. Some come back diminutive. Some come back with totally deformed dimensions. Some come back looking so contorted that they're ugly. and some don't make it back at all. And when the group of neshamas in that holding area see this, they say, wait a minute, this is very, very dangerous. This reality that you call life is a very frightening existence. Granted, if you come back pure, you reach the heights and you're shining brilliant forever, but you can mess up. And if you mess up, look at what you are. And when you come back here, there's no changing. For eternity, you're blackened, you're darkened, you're not a fraction of what you used to be, of what you could have been. And when the neshamas as a group see this, they say, we don't want to take the chance. Granted, if we succeed, it's fantastic, but the dangers are too great, the risk is too real. And explains the Magid Misharim, you are correct, he says to the Beis Yosef, that is what the Mishnah means. When Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel voted and decided, they were speaking from the perspective of the neshamas. The neshamas sit there and say, it's too frightening. It is better not to be born. Our choice is we don't want a part of this world. Yet Hashem still created the world and still puts man in the world. And that's because Hashem, in his superior wisdom, understands that for those who succeed, it's worth it. Granted, it's risky. Granted, it's very dangerous. And granted, if you fail, the failure is for eternity. Who you are forever is but blackened and darkened and contorted. But if you succeed, the heights, the tremendous benefits for eternity you can enjoy, and Hashem in his superior wisdom says it's worth it. What the Mishnah was describing, it's better for man not to be created, is from the perspective of the neshamas, to understand that life is frightening, life is dangerous. But at the end of the day, Hashem created the world. Why? Because it's worth it. Hashem in his great wisdom says, for those who succeed, for those who make it, it's well worth it. My wife is very involved with a young woman who became a recent Baal Tshuva. And this young woman has very little family support, so she's often at our house for Shabbos meals and etc. Her parents are not at all impressed with her becoming frum. In fact, her father often says lines like, oh, are you going to Shabbos for Muncie to dance with the rabbis? They're very unsupportive, very against her being now an Orthodox Jew. In any case, unfortunately, recently her mother passed away. And because we are pretty close, my wife and I both felt it was appropriate that we be at the funeral. And I got to witness the following event. This woman who passed away, her husband goes to the podium, takes out his notes, opens them up, and says, what can I say? She was the love of my life. We were married for 35 years. How can I sum up her life in 5 minutes? But I'll try. She was a good baker. My father used to walk for miles to eat her brownies. She used to love to buy lottery tickets. Every attendant in all the convenience stores around her, they all knew her name. She was always buying lottery tickets. But the highlight of her week was when she had her nails and hair done. And he said a few more trite things of the like, and then he sat down. The rabbi, a conservative or reformed fellow, I'm not sure which, got up after the husband to also add his words of eulogy about the deceased. And he said something to the extent that I must take difference with what you said. I feel you've left out a major part of who this woman was. She was also a Yankee fan. And when I heard those words, I wanted to scream out, what a tragedy. I was witnessing the American Holocaust. If a man can get up and say about his wife that her contribution to the world, her accomplishments were, she enjoyed baking, she enjoyed buying lottery tickets, but the highlight of her week was getting her nails and hair done. What a travesty. What he was saying in plain, simple words was she accomplished nothing. And if a person comes into this world without mitzvahs and leaves without mitzvahs and has accomplished nothing, then they were better off not have been born. And what that Mishnah is telling us is that if you don't use this world appropriately, it's not like it's okay, whatever, it's all right. For eternity, you'll rue the day that you were born. For eternity, you'll say to yourself, it was much better for me not to have been in this world. And I believe that's why Rabbi Meir davened for mercy. You see, the Mashal explains that Mises Rishayim Hanolahem, it is good for Russia to die. You know why? These people were causing tremendous pain to the Gadol Hador. Rabbi Meir was a representative of Torah. And in their state of wickedness, what they were doing was destroying their soul for eternity. And every day that they lived was another problem, another nail in their own coffin, another damage that they were doing to their soul. And when Rabbi Meir davened for mercy, it wasn't because he had to get rid of them because they were bothering him. But Rabbi Meir davened for mercy, the Mashal explains, because he felt terrible for them. They don't realize what they're doing to themselves, but Rabbi Meir did. And he davened, Hashem, please have Rachmanis and take them out of this thing called life because they're damaging themselves. And I believe that's why Rabbi Meir davened. And that's the answer to the first question. But the question still remains, but why didn't Rabbi Meir daven for tshuva? Still, Rabbi Meir could have davened, like his wife said, that they should do tshuva. Granted, they're damaging themselves now, and in a sense, it's better for them not to be here. But if you daven that they do tshuva, it'll be doubly good, because then they can grow, they can accomplish. Why didn't Rabbi Meir simply say that? And to answer this question, we have to focus a little bit more on why Hashem created us, what we're doing here, and what Hashem expects from us. And to do that, let's visit an interesting Gemara. Amar Rava, b'shah shemachnisin adol medin. Rava says, when they bring a person to judgment, when I'm done my job here, I stand in front of the Beis Din Shamala, the heavenly tribunal, and they ask me a question. The very first question that they ask is, nasata v'nasata be'emuna, your business dealings. When you went to work, when you were in the workplace, was it with emuna? Tosus explains that even though the first judgment is about spiritual accomplishments, the first punishments are in the realm of, did you learn enough Torah? Did you accomplish enough? This Gemara is telling us that the first question that they ask isn't that. The first question that they ask is, did you do your business dealings with emuna? And normally this is translated as, were you honest in business? Were you ethical in business? Did you go about your day-to-day in a way that a person would look and say, wow, that's an honest, ethical man? And I believe that this Gemara is problematic. Why? Because if you think about the accomplishments of a human being, and if you think about what we were put on the planet to do, you'll see there's a myriad number of issues. There are many, many areas of self-perfection. There's character traits. There's kindliness. There's accomplishments vis-a-vis others. There are tremendous, tremendous amounts of things that a human being can do in terms of perfecting himself, making the world better. And there are many, many, many mitzvahs. Now, granted, being honest in business is important. Granted, it's a big part of who you are. But it's but a part. There are so many more things. There are so many more issues. And the question is, why is this the very first question that they ask you? And to focus on this and understand this, we have to understand a little bit better who's in charge of life. Let me explain to you what I mean. Mark tells us that there are three areas. Your world that you live in, there are three areas in which you can be blessed or the opposite. Those three areas are wealth, children, and spiritual accomplishments. Your Torah study, how much you accomplish, how much you learn, is a tremendous bracha or the opposite. Your wealth, whether you have great wealth or poverty, is a blessing or the opposite. And how many children you merit to have is a blessing or the opposite. And these are the areas in which a person can know whether he's blessed or cursed in this world. And then the Gemara says, I'll give you a formula. What if you want to be wealthy? What if you want to have great Torah accomplishments? What if you want to have great children? What should you do? The Gemara says, what should you do to become wealthy? And the Gemara explains to us what you should do for Torah study, and then what you should do for children. And the formula for all of them is the same. So let's focus on one. What should you do if you want to be wealthy? Explains the Gemara, Yarbe b'schora. Do a lot of business. V'yisav yitim b'emuna. And deal honestly in your business dealings. If you like to become wealthy, what you have to do is you have to open a business and work at it very, very diligently. Work very, very hard. Be very focused. And do it honestly. Says the Gemara, Harbi also came v'lo hu'ilu. Many people did that and didn't succeed. How could you tell me that the formula for wealth is to work hard? There are many, many people who work hard and don't succeed. And even if you tell me it's work hard and be honest, there are many people who work hard and are honest and don't have great wealth. Explains the Gemara, Eliyavakesh rachmi mimisha osher shalom. You should ask mercy from he who owns the wealth, meaning you should daven. It's not enough for you to work very hard, not enough to be honest, you have to daven. Says the Gemara, my kamash malon, if so, why did you say you have to work so hard? If it's all dependent on Hashem, if it's all dependent on the decree, why do I have to daven? And if I have to daven, why do I have to work? Answers the Gemara, blo hai, lo sagi hai. One without the other doesn't work. One without the other isn't sufficient. And what this Gemara is sharing with us is a fundamental principle. If you would like to find success in any area in life, there are two things you have to do. You have to do your hishtadlis, your part, and you have to daven. In terms of business, the hishtadlis is to work very hard and to be honest, but you also have to daven. If you daven alone, it's not sufficient. And if you work alone, it's not sufficient. Both have to be there. And this balance is probably the most difficult challenge that any human being is faced with. Before I was born, it was set, an exact life setting for me. Chazal tell us that before a person was put into this world, how strong, how tall, how wealthy, all of the features of his life were set. His goal is to go out there into the world and live the life. Meaning to say, I have to work very hard. I have to be very, very involved in this world. I have to go in this world in the derech hateva, in the way of nature. That's my role. And I have to know that exactly that which Hashem decreed long ago is what I will have. There's a fellow who comes to me regularly for tzedakah. And he came to me recently. Bank is about to foreclose on my mortgage. I need help. I don't know what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from me. I don't know what Hashem has in mind. I don't understand it, but I need help. Please, can you help me? I didn't say this to him, but I sure wanted to. Don't go asking questions on God. How about get a job? You see, the fellow doesn't work. For various reasons, whether they be emotional, whether it be psychological, certain jobs aren't good enough for him. He can only do this and this, whatever it may be. He doesn't work for a living. And if you don't work for a living, guess what? You're not going to earn a living. But wait, I thought it was decreed. I thought on Rosh Hashanah, Hashem decrees how much money I'm to make. Hashem decrees on Rosh Hashanah, signs on Yom Kippur exactly how much money you are to make, and that's Hashem's part in the equation. And you still have your part. Your part is to go out there and get a job. Hashem decrees you're going to make a huge amount of money or a pittance. You're going to make $50,000, you make $5 million, whatever that dollar amount is, Hashem decrees it, provided you do your part. And if you don't do your part, all bets are off. Usually what happens is you don't succeed. It could have been decreed before you were born that you'll marry and have a very successful, large family, happy children, and it'll be wonderful. And you have fully within your power not to allow that to come to fruition. If you wake up one morning and say, you know, this whole going out business, this whole going getting married and having kids, it's just too much of a hassle. I'm not participating in the game. I'm not doing it. What do you think is going to happen? What's going to happen is you're not going to get married, you're not going to have kids, and that family that was slated to come from you will not come from you. But when I thought Chazal say, 40 days before you're born, it's a Basharet Bazug, the daughter of so-and-so, set for me. So that's Basharet. If it's Basharet, how could I change it? Bashert does not mean that it has to be. Bashert means that Hashem decrees that this is what's good, this is what's proper, this is what's accessible and available to you. But you have to go out there in the world and do what you're supposed to do. To earn a living, you get a job. To get married, you find the right one. To have children, you marry that wife and you make sure that you have a happy home. And when you do that, you know that all that you're going to bring about is that which Hashem has decided for you. When I get that job, I have to work very, very hard at it because that's the way Hashem wants me to use this world, in the derech hateva, in the way of nature. And I have to know that exactly that which Hashem decrees to be will be. The amount of money, the woman, the house, my life setting before I was born was set, and I have to go out there in this world and use this world very actively. Both of those are completely accurate. And I have a mashal which I think is important. It's been said in a number of shmuzim, but it bears saying again, if you'd like to understand the ishtadlus, imagine the following. You have an envelope. In that envelope is a number that's written. You take that envelope to a ticket booth, and you have your choice of which ticket booth. There are 20, 25 ticket booths in front of you, much like if you go to Chol HaMoed, if you go to Great Adventures, you'll see the ticket booths all lined up. You can take your envelope to ticket booth 1, 2, 10, 15, whichever one you could choose. So imagine you have your sealed envelope, and you bring it, you get on line 14, you're waiting and waiting, and finally you bring your envelope. The person behind the ticket booth opens the envelope, reads a number, and pulls out $1 million and gives you that money. Oh my goodness, you're the greatest ticket booth guy in the world. I love you. Thank you. You gave me so much money. Thank you. You don't thank the ticket booth guy. What the ticket booth guy did was he read the number written on that slip of paper in your sealed envelope. Whether that number was $5,000, $50,000, or $1 million, that was the amount that he had to give you. His job is to read the number and give you that amount of money. And I think that's an apt parable to our working. I have a choice, lawyer, doctor, and Indian chief. My choice is to do what I am going to do in this world to earn my living. We discussed shmuz, a number of shmuzim discuss how to choose a career. Number 22 discusses specifically how to do it. Hashem gives each person a nature, and that's what you're supposed to follow, your teva, your inclination. But at the end of the day, whether I choose ticket booth number 2, 10, or 22, presuming that I'm acting in the ways of the world, presuming that I'm acting in a way that's responsible, that's logical and intelligent, I'm using this world in the way of the world, then whether I choose door 1, door 2, or door 10, this manner or this manner, exactly the amount that Hashem has decreed will come to me. If I decide I'm not going to the ticket booth, I decide it's too much work for me, it's not going to happen. But when I decide to go to that ticket booth, I bring about exactly that which Hashem has decreed long ago. And that's what Chazal mean, that everything is set. And you may wonder, okay, it sounds very formulaic. It sounds like everything is decreed. It sounds like man has very little control. So what do I have control over? And as Chazal tell us, there's only one area that I have control over. Before Hashem created me, Hashem measured who I am, my personality, strengths, and weaknesses. As an neshama, the I inside has certain differences. Each human face is different one than the other. Each mind is different one than the other. Each personality is different one from the next. And Hashem looks and says, based on your strengths and weaknesses, what will be the ideal life setting for you? What will be the ideal life setting that will test you but give you the perfect balance, where you'll have the opportunity to shine, to reach stellar heights? On the other hand, you'll be greatly tempted, but it matches you. And before you were born, Hashem searched the generations and found the right time period, found the right family in the right birth order, put you into a body that's supposed to be so strong or so weak, such a given amount of intelligence, such different strengths and weaknesses, and that is the perfect balance for you, the perfect opportunity for you to become the great human being you could be. And there's only one area that Hashem doesn't mix in, and that's who you are. How much money you make, how many children you can have, your success in every area in life is all predetermined. All you can do is actualize the potential. You can reach no higher. All you could do is reach what was set for you. But the one area that isn't set is who you will be as a human being, who you will be as a person. You were given the opportunity to shine, to become tremendous, or the opposite. And this one area that we call Yiras Shamayim, self-perfection, which means growing and dominating and learning and character traits and everything that the mitzvahs do, is the one area that is within your control. And that is the one area that Hashem doesn't mix into. Hashem determines exactly what you need for the life setting. And then when you do your part, Hashem already has decided what's best for you. And bitachon means trusting Hashem, knowing that Hashem knows better than I, knowing that Hashem has it all worked out, and trusting that Hashem knows that this is the best life setting for me, and knowing that Hashem knows better than I what I need. But that's in regard to all the life settings. But in regards to who I am for eternity, who I am as a human being, Hashem doesn't mix into that area. If it could be, Hashem gave this thing called free will, which means that you are able to shape your destiny, not how much money you make, not how many children you have, not how pretty or handsome or your level of intelligence, but how much of you you become. At the end of your days, they ask you one question: how much of your potential did you reach? How much of the greatness contained within you did you actualize? And in that area, Hashem doesn't mix. In that area, you're given free will. You become as great as the greatest, or you become whatever. But in that area alone, Hashem doesn't mix. Hakol bidei shamayim chutz miyirei shamayim. Everything is within the control of heaven. Hashem determines every action on the planet, everything that's going to happen, with the exception of who you become for eternity. And I believe that's the answer to the second question as to why Rabbi Meir didn't daven that they do tshuva. Rabbi Meir saw these biruni. He saw these people. They were acting in an evil way. I can't ask Hashem to tell them to do tshuva. That's the one area that Hashem doesn't mix into. Hashem determines how much money, how much success, how much health, how much everything they'll have in life, but not who they are. The one area that's left to mankind to control is Yiras Shamayim, his real actualizing of his potential, whether he's religious or not, whether he accomplishes or doesn't. He works on his character traits or he doesn't. That's the one area that Hashem doesn't mix in. Says Rav Meir, how could I ask Hashem that they should do tshuva? I would be asking Hashem to violate one of the immutable laws of nature, that Hashem doesn't affect a person's bechira, that a person was given free will, and that free will is perfectly balanced, and Hashem doesn't mix into that area. So obviously, Rav Meir said, I have no choice. To ask Hashem to have him do tshuva, Hashem will never do that. At least let me ask that they should leave quickly so that they shouldn't damage themselves anymore. And I believe that's the answer to the second question. The reason why Rabbi Meir didn't daven they should do tshuva is because he knew it wouldn't work. He knew it violates free will, and therefore he didn't do it. And so in that sense, we answer both questions. Why Rabbi Meir daven that they should die? Because it was mercy for them, because they were ruining their existence. Why he didn't ask that they should do tshuva is because Hashem doesn't mix into that area. So everything is fine and well, except for one problem. And that is that his wife said, well, why don't you daven that they should do tshuva? At which point Rabbi Meir did, and in fact, they did tshuva. She quoted a pasuk, Bruri was very learned, and Rabbi Meir agreed, and he then davened, and they did tshuva. But wait a minute, I thought Hashem doesn't mix into that area. I thought that's called free will, that's bechira. I thought a kol bidei shamayim except for yiras shamayim, that's the one thing that Hashem doesn't mix with. So now the question is, so what was the conclusion of the Gemara? What was Bruria's advice that in fact Rabbi Meir listened to? And to understand this, I'd like to focus on something that I experienced about 15 years ago. For a while, I was considering going into Kirov professionally, and part of my seeing what was out there is I went to a Gateway Shabbaton. I'd never been to one before, and what I experienced was eye-opening. 400 secular Jews, most of them with almost no exposure whatsoever to Torah, are sitting there in the room, and fantastic speaker after fantastic speaker gets up there and makes powerful, convincing arguments. Rabbi Ordman spoke, Rabbi Sushad, an all-star team of people were presenting the Torah, presenting the fact that Hashem gave the Torah to the Jewish nation at Har Sinai, the authenticity of the Torah, the beauty of it, and you could see the people being moved. You could see it was a long weekend. It started Thursday, went through Friday, Shabbos, Sunday, session after session, and you could almost feel the air change, and you could see the effect. Gateways brags that 25% of their attendees, 25% of the people who attend a Gateway Shabbaton go on to become from. Okay. Now I want you to imagine the following. Imagine that it's 1 month before that Gateway Shabbaton. And I want you to imagine for a minute that you're talking to a coworker. You're talking to a coworker and you're very friendly with him. You've had quite a number of conversations before about this thing called religion. And you say to him, there's this Gateway Shabbaton coming up in 4 weeks. I think it's a great idea for you to go. And you discuss it back and forth. And he thinks about it. The next day he says to you, I thought about it. I decided I don't want to do it. And now you find yourself in a real dilemma. Oh, my goodness. It's great for him. I know for sure. His eyes will light up. He's just the perfect kind of guy. I have no question he'll become from if he does it. On the other hand, I can't push. And if I push, I'm considered pushy. Do push. Don't push. Do talk. Don't. You don't say a word. And for 2 weeks, you sleepless nights, you're wrestling in your mind back and forth. Should I? Or shouldn't I? Should I? Finally, after 2 weeks, you say, that's it. You go back to him and say, I thought about it. I really think you should go for this and this reason. He says, no. Yeah. Finally, after a long discussion, he says, okay, fine. And in fact, he goes. He shows up at that Shabbaton, and he hears speaker after speaker, and he really buys into it, and he makes up a Seder to learn, and he starts growing, and after a while, he keeps more mitzvahs and more mitzvahs before you know what he's from, before you know what he's keeping mitzvahs he's learning, before you know what he marries a from girl. He goes on to have children, and he creates a beautiful house, many, many children, B'nai Torah, and it's now 15 years later, and you remember that scene. It would be difficult for me to imagine the gratefulness that he would have to you. You changed my life. You changed my eternity. I would have been just another person like that woman whose husband said about her, she loved to buy the lottery tickets. But instead, look what I am. Look what I'm accomplishing. For eternity, he'll be grateful to you. And obviously, for eternity, you'll also benefit. Because as the Chovas Levavos explains to us, if you are the catalyst, if you cause another person to do a mitzvah, they benefit from the mitzvah. And because you are the goreim, because you're the catalyst, the reward for that comes back to you as well. And that means for eternity, everything this man accomplishes, his wife, his children, everything that's brought about through this future dynasty is accredited to your account. So for eternity, you'll also be very, very glad that you had that second conversation. But there's a little bit more going on beneath the surface here. Let's climb up 50,000 feet. Let's try to imagine what it's like, Kaviyachol, when Hashem is sitting there at that conversation 4 weeks before the Gateway Shabbaton. When you say to him, I think you should, no, yeah, no, and he says no. And if it could be Hashem says, oi, get him to go, please. Don't you understand? He'll be so happy. He'll grow. He'll accomplish. He'll marry a from girl. He'll have great children. He'll bring a please ask him again. And you go home. You feel down. You don't know. Should I or shouldn't I? I don't know. And Hashem's saying, please do it. Should I or shouldn't I? I'm not sure. You're wrestling back and forth for 2 weeks. And Kaviyachol Hashem is sitting, please, please do it. Do it. Do it. And finally, you go back that day. 2 weeks later, and you say, I think, and Hashem's saying, yeah, come on, go home. And the fellow's saying, I'm not sure. Oh, please, no, I'm not. Back and forth. And finally he says, yes, and if it could be, Hashem has such hana, such joy, such pleasure. Wow, you saved the Jew. Wow. And if we could imagine the joy that the Shechina, that Hashem has, it's probably unimaginable. So let's ask the obvious philosophical question. Excuse me, but aren't you God? I mean, hate to be rude around here, but if you want that guy to go to that Shabbaton, arrange it. Hashem, you're very capable. You created Shemayim Varetz, heaven and earth. You're quite capable of arranging things for him to go. If you want it so bad, and if you really feel it's great, and it makes you happy if it could be, so why don't you just arrange it? And the answer is because Hashem cannot. Because when Hashem created this thing called free will, Hashem created it into the very nature of creation. Hashem chose for you the perfect life setting, gave you the perfect environment, and says there's one area into which I will not mix. Whether you choose right or choose wrong is up to you. I can't affect it, but human beings can. And in that sense, when you're on the scene with that guy 2 weeks before that Shabbaton, you're doing something that Hashem, if it could be, cannot do. Because Hashem made these rules, this thing called free will, and made the immutable law of nature that Hashem will not mix, will not change the balance. Hashem doesn't mix into that area, but Hashem never said human beings can't. And if you effectively bring him along, and you're the catalyst to change, you are credited with changing his eternity because you did it. And you did something, if it could be, that Hashem himself couldn't do. Because Hashem created this world in a way that Hashem will not change those laws and doesn't mix into it. And I believe that that's actually the answer for what Burry was saying to Reb Meir. Do you understand the power of prayer? Hashem will not change a person's balance. Hashem won't mix into this thing called free will. But that doesn't mean you can't. And it doesn't mean praying can't. Just like you could take a person and bring him to that Shabbaton, you could daven for him. What Breuer was saying to Reb Meir was, you can do that which Hashem can't. Hashem said he won't mix in it, but Hashem didn't prevent us from. And if you daven to Hashem and you say to Hashem, please change the balance, that's not Hashem doing it. That's a power given to man. And Hashem gives man power to affect this world, to affect upper worlds, and to change even the way that Hashem will act, and even to affect the balance. And Reb Meir davened, and in fact, these people did tshuva. And I believe the chiddush from this Gemara is profound. Profound and unimaginable. I've often thought, what would it be like to be a great kirov of personality? And Baruch Hashem, we have many. Rabbi Mordechai Becker, if you've ever heard him, he's brilliant, entertaining. He has a crowd laughing and crying almost in the next moment. Could you imagine the impact that he has and the opportunity that he has? And I would imagine you say to yourself, oh my goodness, if I were him, I wouldn't sleep nights. All I do is find another secular audience and more Jews and more Jews. And there are so many, 80% of our nation, and they're dying off, Rahman Salam, quickly. Get out there, do, don't sleep at night, just run, do. But me, I'm not that. I'm just a regular person. What can I do? And it may be true. It could be that you don't have the talent. We all have our own abilities. We could all find our own niches. But I don't have that ability to stand up in front of a large crowd and do what he does. But what if I shared with you that I could be as effective as he? Everything we do in this world has two components to it. That's what the Gemara told us. If you want to become wealthy, be very proactive in business and be honest, and daven, pray. Two components to every ishtadlus. You want to have a family, you want to find the right person, you have to go out into the marketplace, find the right person, and daven. Both are parts. If you cannot do that which others can do, that doesn't mean you can't daven. What Burry was saying to her mayor is, you have an effect, you can change things. If you daven to Hashem, Hashem could change the balance. And that understanding is profound. If I recognize the fact that there are millions of Jews, there are 5.5 million Jews in the United States of America. If there are a million that are from, it's a lot. Worldwide, there's supposed to be 15 odd million Jews or somewhere in that vicinity. And how many are from? It's hard to know exactly, but we're talking about 10 million, 12 million, 12 million Jews who have no connection to Torah. And if it could be, Hashem sits there and says, I put these precious neshamas into this world to grow, to accomplish. And what are they doing? They're baking brownies. They're buying lottery tickets. They're getting their hair and nails done each week. And what they're doing is nothing. And when they come back after this short thing called life, for eternity, they're going to be damaged and sullied, diminutive, and it's so easy. But if it could be, Hashem says, I can't affect it. I can't change it. But human beings can. And when I can do on a Yom Kippur, what I can do on a Shabbos, what I can do on a weekday, is daven to Hashem and say, Hashem, please have mercy. Change it. Let it work out. Let it be that they meet the right person in the right time. Let it be that there are more such organizations. Let it be that this problem goes away. And it's not just Kiruv Rechokim. There are many, many issues that we as a nation deal with. There's a Shidduch crisis today. I can't do anything about it. I can't change the demographics, nor can I find matches for all the older singles. But I can, because I could daven to Hashem. I could say to Hashem, please effectuate a change. Hashem, you know how to do it. You work out the circumstances. I don't know how. I don't have the capacity, but you do. And that tefillah, that prayer can change the way Hashem acts in the world, the way that situation comes about. We have youth at risk. Rahman al-San, you see him all over. Granted, it's but a small part of the population. Arguably, it's 2%, 3%. But we're talking about thousands of young souls. And you see how miserable and unhappy they are and what torture they're going. But what could I do? I can't go on every street corner in Brooklyn and bring them all in. I can't stop texting on Shabbos. I don't have control over that. I sure do. I could daven to Hashem and say, Hashem, I can't, but you can. Please have rachmanus. And if you think about all of the issues that we as a nation deal with, divorce in our community, people who are sick, people who can't pay their bills, if we recognize the power of prayer, the power and effectiveness of davening, we would daven all day. We'd sit there davening and davening on and on without stop. The problem is we don't think about it. That's not something I can control, not something I can affect. And what the Gemara is sharing with us is it's not true. When Rabbi Meir saw these Bironi, the reason why he said to Hashem, please have mercy and let them die, was not because he was overwhelmed by the pain, not because he hated them or anything like that. He looked at them and said, Ay Nebuch, because that's what the Mishnah tells us. It is better for man not to be created. And the question is, what do you mean? How could Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel both say it's better for man not to be created? Hashem did it. And that's what the Maggid was saying to the Beis Yosef from the perspective of the Neshama. When they're sitting there in purity and holiness, when they're sitting there in the holding bin before they're put into this world, they see some neshamas come back pure and brilliant, and some that come back shining like the sun in midday, and they say, we want to be part of this. But then they watch others come back not so pure and not so unsullied. They see neshamas come back blackened and darkened and deformed, and they see the dangers of this world. And they say it's too risky. We want no part of it. Hashem in his great wisdom says it's worth it for those who succeed. But from the neshama's perspective, they say it's not worth the risk. The reason why the neshamas say that is because they see neshamas come into this world and leave this world and say the words, would have been better off not being born. And when you see thousands, millions of people who would have been better off not being born, it's a tragedy. Rabbi Meir saw a handful in his neighborhood who were damaging their soul for eternity, and he said to Hashem, please have mercy, it's horrible for them. And he davened that they died. And his wife said to him, there's a better approach. You should ask them to do tshuva, to which Rabbi Meir initially thought was impossible. Why? Because that's the one area that Hashem doesn't mix in. That's the one area that Hashem leaves for mankind. Hashem determines how much money, your success, which wife, which house. Your life setting has been predetermined. You have to go out there and use the world. But at the end of the day, exactly that which Hashem has determined is there. The amount is written on that ticket in your envelope. You get to choose this ticket booth or that ticket booth, but it won't matter. Those areas Hashem decides, but not whether you choose to grow or not. Not whether you choose to keep mitzvahs or not keep mitzvahs. Not whether you choose to be kindly or nasty. Who you are is completely within your capacity. And says Rav Meir to Beria, I can't daven for that. Why? Because Hashem won't mix in those areas. And yet Berea says back to him, it's not true. She quotes a pasuk, and in fact, Rabbi Meir in the end agrees and understands that he can affect the change because Hashem said that Hashem won't mix in those areas, but Hashem doesn't prevent us. And as lofty and as hard to believe as it sounds, it's what Chazal is telling us, that we human beings can do that which Hashem can't do. Because when Hashem created these laws of nature, He made it such that He doesn't change free will, but that's Hashem's decision as to what He will do in this world, but He doesn't hold us to those rules. I can change my own destiny, I can affect yours, and what this Chazal is sharing with us is that tefillah, davening, can make that difference. And there's one more step. Normally, when we look at a Chazal like this, I think we take the attitude, oh, sure, if I were Rabbi Meir, sure. Man, if his stature, his tefillah can change things. If I were an Amora, a Rishon, some great tzaddik, maybe. But me, I'm just a regular guy. And my davening can't really make that kind of difference. And I want to share with you something that's so eye-opening, that's actually profound. Sara Imenu sees the child that Hagar has, and she's appalled because Yishmael was a Rasha, and he was doing wicked acts, and he was involved in Avodah Zarah and everything under the sun. And finally, when Yitzhak is born, she realizes that this Yishmael is going to be an influence on this future tzaddik. And she comes to Avram and says, you have to get him out of here. He's not just on the caliber, he's a Rasha. Yitzhak is a tzaddik, and Yitzhak is going to learn from his ways. Yishmael is older. He's going to influence him. Says Sarah to Avram, you have to get rid of her. Shem says to Avram, Kola Shatoma Sarah, Tishma Bakola, listen to what she says. And in fact, Avram sends out Hagar and Yishmael. And they go walking. They go into the desert. Eventually, they run out of food, drink, whatever they had. And they realize that there's no hope. They're lost in the desert. And they sit down. And the Nar, Yishmael, sits down and begins crying. Vishma Lakim is called a Nar. Hashem heard the voice of the Nar. And then finally, the Malach says to Hagar, Hashem heard the voice of the Nar, heard the voice of Yishmael, and you'll be saved. At that point, they saw an oasis, a miracle happened. They saw water, and they were saved. Because I'll tell us, at that moment, there was a huge fight up in Shemayim. Hashem wanted to bring a miracle to save Yishmael, and the Malach Yashar said, how can you do that? Yishmael is a Rasha, and you know what's going to come from him? What's going to come from him are children that are going to oppress the Jewish nation. How could you do that? Hashem says, as he is now, he's not enough of a Rasha to destroy. Basher Husham, where he's holding now, because of the merits of Avram, he's still worthy to save. And Hashem says, this is what I'm going to do. And this would be fine, except for one observation. And that is an observation that Rashi makes. And that is, it's very clear that both Hagar and Yishmael davened. They both cried out to Hashem. They both asked Hashem for a miracle, and in the end Hashem listened. But the pasuk is very clear when it says, Vayishmael kim es kol hanar. Hashem heard the voice of Yishmael, and because of the tefillahs, because of the begging of Yishmael, that's why Hashem brought the miracle. Says Rashi Mikan, from here we learn, Shiyafa tefillas achola mitfilas acherim olav. From here we learn that the sick person himself, his tefillah, his davening, his prayers are more effective than other people who would daven for him. Vehi kodemes es kabel, and it is received first. Says Rashi, what you see from here is that Yishmael's tefillahs were accepted and Hagar's weren't. Why? Because he was a sick person himself. Granted, she was praying for him as well, but she's not the sick person. The sick person, his own prayers are accepted more readily. They're accepted first. His were accepted and not hers because he was praying for himself. And let's focus on what this Rashi is sharing with us. Yishmael was a Rasha. Hagar was a Tzadikus. If you pay attention carefully to later on, the Chumash describes that Avram took Keturah. Rashi says, who was his Keturah? His Keturah was Hagar, Why is she called this name here when her name is Hagar? Shenoim ma'aseh ketores. Her actions were as beautiful as the incense burning on the Mizbeach. Granted, she wasn't Sarah Imenu. She was not one of the Imos, but she merited leaving the house of Paro and marrying Avram. She was a holy, righteous woman. She studied Sarah's ways. She studied the ways of Avram, and she was a righteous, holy woman. So let's put this into perspective. This woman, the wife, the concubine of Avram, is begging Hashem, please have mercy, please have mercy. Her prayers aren't accepted. But Yishmael, the Rasha, the one who's thrown out of the house of Avram for Avodah Zarah and whatever else he's doing, idol worship, and whatever the sins, his prayers are accepted? It sounds very difficult to understand. And whether we understand exactly why or not, it has to do with the fact that Hashem has mercy. Probably when a person calls out for his own needs, there's more purity in it. There's more clinging to Hashem. There's more desperation. But no matter whether we understand exactly the understanding, this point is clear. His tefillahs, his prayers were accepted, and this great woman's prayers weren't. Why? Because he was praying for his own needs, and that has a greater impact. And with this, Chazal is sharing with us something profound. And that is, we often think, oh, if I had a tzaddik to daven for me, oh, it'd be wonderful if I could get the Chofetz Chaim to daven for me, if I could get someone of that caliber. But me, what do my tefillahs do? What this Chazal is sharing with us is quite the opposite. My prayers are more effective than anyone else davening for me, even a Hagar, even a woman of that stature. Why? Because Hashem wants a person to reach out to him. Hashem wants a person to connect to Hashem. And when a person does that with sincerity and reaches out and says, Hashem, I depend on you. I cannot do this. It's beyond me. Hashem, help me. And that prayer is powerful, effective, far more effective than even a great tzaddik davening for him. And what this means on many levels is if I would understand the impact, the effect of my prayer, if I knew what my prayers could do, I would probably daven and daven and not stop davening all day long. I could affect other people. I could affect problems and issues. I have a neighbor who has this problem. I hear about that problem. I'd be asking Hashem, please have mercy, please have mercy. Didn't Rameya teach us? I could change things, physical things, spiritual things. And more than that, how about my own problems? Whether it's my children or my wife or my father or my issues in my world, I can effectuate changes bigger than great tzaddikim davening. If we understood the impact, if we understood the power, we would daven and daven. Often it's hard for us to perceive it. Certain times of the year it's easier. Shabbos it's easier. Rosh Hashanah it's easier. Yom Kippur standing in shul, there's a purity. You could experience Hashem and reach out. You have to use every opportunity, but especially a time that's more ripe, Elul, time when a person feels this over, feels awakening. May Hashem grant us the understanding and the ability to put this into practice to recognize the effect of what our davening, our prayers do.